Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 171, recorded on March 1st, 2013. Enjoy! This episode of We Have Communicators is brought to you by Squarespace, the beautiful and intuitive website publishing platform that allows anyone to easily create professional web pages, blogs, online stores, and galleries on a single platform. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com/communicators and use offer code WHC3. And they just launched built-in e-commerce so you can sell digital and physical items from your website all within the Squarespace platform. Alright, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey Jeff, how's it going?
It's going dang fine, and well, I'm so excited to be here.
Wow.
No, I am, actually.
That's good. I'm excited
survived
to be here,
Ignite.
Too.
Survived Ignite.
Yeah.
I totally survived Ignite. That was so cool. I wish you guys could have been there.
Yeah, that would have been fun.
I'm watching for the video to show up online.
I would love to hear what you think. And for all of our listeners, I would love to hear what you think because I've never done Ignite before.
So what is...
I really want to see it because you and my wife have the same kryptonite. I don't know if I ever told you this.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had someone come up to me after the event and she said that I had changed her life that night because she had been told her whole life she's just crazy and being too picky about things, and she didn't understand what the problem was. And I'm explaining the whole super smeller thing in my presentation, and she said it felt like I was talking directly to her the whole time. What? She's a super smeller and had no idea.
Okay, wait. Firstly, what's Ignite Denver?
Okay, so Ignite is a really cool event that happens all around the world, and
it's like a TED thing.
It's sort of like a TED thing. Mm. So the deal is, you get a bunch of people together that all talk about whatever topic that they want, and you have 5 minutes for your presentation, and you have 20 slides that auto advance every 15 seconds.
Oh.
Yeah.
And so
they have to auto advance. That's the thing, is you have your slides and you have to stay on time.
Yes. And so it starts, you go through your presentation and you're done. And if you run over, they cut you off.
Okay. So what is this thing that you spoke about?
So my presentation was called Perfume is My Kryptonite, Why My Superpower is Killing Me, because I'm a super smeller. And
which is something I'm not aware of. So it seems pretty self-explanatory.
Okay, so a lot of people know what a super taster is.
Extremely heightened sense of smell, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like that, but for smell. So a hypersensitive sense of smell. And perfume is just an absolute killer for me.
Oh, my wife hates it. It drives her nuts. If anybody has on heavy perfume, she has to like pretty much leave the room or she'll pass out.
That's what I have to do too. Finding soap that I could use, finding shampoo that I could use,
yep.
Household cleaning supplies. It's people are amazed when they realize just what it is that I have to do to be able to do a lot of the things everyone else just does daily without thinking about it. It's crazy.
Yeah, we have unscented everything. Like certain, you know, like laundry detergent was like a huge ordeal.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Laundry detergent. I went through just a ridiculous amount of time with being sick all the time from doing laundry, getting really bad rashes and stuff from the different soaps, and Tide Free.
So is it just manufactured scents, or is it like everything you just hyper aware of smell? Like if someone has bad BO or something.
I can smell it, but that isn't, even though it bothers me because, you know, when people smell bad, well, they smell bad, but it's not a problem for me like perfume is. So if someone smells bad.
fake fragrances is like a huge problem. Scented candles, you know, anything that's kind of bogus.
Which is nearly everything, actually.
Yeah. Yep. You'd be surprised when you're not aware of it, when you're not hyper aware of it, it's not a big deal. But when you live with somebody who is, it becomes readily apparent how prevalent it is in our society.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those weird things.
Well, that's so cool.
So
I'm
anyhow,
very excited to see Jeff's presentation.
I would love to see
it's
that.
It's relevant to my life.
So for everyone that's listening right now, the website that you will go to find it when they're up, which should be soon, is ignitedenver.org. So we'll have to put a link in on the webpage.
But like Jeff said, they have Ignite things all over the world. So might be one near you if you want to check it out.
Probably. Oh, and speaking of domain names, for the one guy who said, please don't get rid of whcpodcast.com because they can't spell communicators. I believe I did renew it. Either I did or I definitely plan on it when it asks me. So don't worry about that.
That's good.
You know, see, that's
you haven't introduced
that
me yet.
We love everyone.
Just FYI.
I was going to see if you noticed, but it's Adam Christensen from the MacCast is also
here. Yep, I'm here.
He decided to speak before he was introduced, so I decided to just let it go.
Well, we went down the Ignite path anyhow, so yeah.
And this will set the precedence for the show, so be prepared, folks.
Yeah, it's good.
Strap in, grab a helmet.
Yeah, strap in.
And a drink.
Uh-huh. Say, hey, one more thing on the Ignite thing.
Sure.
When you watch the presentation, at no point do I mention Apple, iPhone, iPad, iPod, or Macintosh.
Because they don't stink.
Not kidding. They don't stink. That's right.
What is that? Is that, BB Edit? Isn't that their slogan?
Something
it
like
doesn't
that,
stink.
Yeah. It doesn't stink.
It doesn't suck.
Oh, it doesn't suck. Okay. There's another thing that talks about stinking. I don't know. Anyway. So the first thing we have to talk about is something that's not even on your list of stuff, but it's
we have a list I didn't look at.
Yeah, that one. Panic, the guys who do Coda and Prompt and a bunch of other awesome applications, they decided to take apart one of the Lightning digital AV adapters to see how it works and what it does. And what they found is that based on the hardware, there is a mini ARM process. It's a mini computer in there, in that little adapter. So there's an ARM processor and 256 megabytes of RAM.
Wait, okay, just to get this straight, in a Lightning cable.
Not the Lightning cable, the AV adapter.
Cable.
The Lightning, no. The Lightning AV cable.
Lightning AV cable. Oh, man. Okay, I got it now. Apparently I'm slow.
Yeah, 256 megabytes of RAM and an ARM chip. Based on what they've seen, they think that it probably runs a mini version of iOS and does not do just a straight HDMI or a digital signal that eventually ends up being...
Wait, who broke this story?
Panic on their blog.
Okay, cool.
They say that it's some kind of form of AirPlay. So
like
it makes
built into the connector?
Yeah.
So it's like AirPlay with wires.
Right, yeah. So
which
it's
is usually called a video adapter.
Right. Yeah. Yes, exactly. But they say that I've never used one of these, but they say that there's a noticeable amount of lag when you first plug it in, and they assume that's because it has to actually boot up. But it's only a few seconds, but at the same time, it's noticeable.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. And there's a lot more interesting.
How long before someone hacks Linux onto that thing?
Someone probably already has.
Yeah. No, that's
now
what I'm hoping for.
Little Matchbox robots with it.
It's like I made my AV adapter into a web server.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. It's like $50 too. Suddenly, a $50 price tag becomes a cool thing and not a totally suck thing. So yeah, there's that.
I really want to see the coding hacks that come out for that now. Because, Adam, you're right, someone will do it.
Oh, yeah. Someone's going to hack Linux.
That'd be interesting to see if they can get some kind of interface to it, because I'm not sure how difficult it is to
it's got a connector on it, right?
Well, and I would assume
you could adapt some sort of serial connection into that. I mean, it's Lightning.
Yeah, there's probably a serial connector, or take a jailbroken iPhone and, I don't know, something. We'll see. I'm guessing that nothing will happen, or that we will never hear about it.
Well, now that the cat's out of the bag,
we'll hear about it.
We'll hear about it. Somebody's going to do something cool with it.
Okay, hopefully. So, what we've been suspecting all along about the iPad mini versus the big size, normal size iPad seems to be true.
It is smaller.
It is smaller indeed. In addition to that, the sales, it's outselling the big iPad by quite a bit.
Well, yeah.
Well, so if you look at it, they say that shipments of the 9.7-inch iPad fell from 7.4 million, and this is of the panels, I should say, in December to 1.3 million in January, where the shipments of the 7.9 panels rose to over 5 million. And that's actually at the point where the demand and the actual production sort of started syncing up finally.
But there's two reasons for that, right? There's one is just the age of the two different products to a certain degree.
Okay.
Right? The 9.7 has been around longer than the iPad mini. And then two, price point.
Yes.
You don't think that it's...
It's pure and simple.
I don't think it's just price point. I think that a smaller display, it's been pretty obvious that people are looking for the smaller display in their tablets.
I think price point has a lot to do with it. I think there was a lot of people who wanted an iPad and didn't want to pull the trigger when it was that much more expensive than... That's why they're diversifying the line at this point. That's why they waited so long. You know, everybody was like, why aren't you competing against the lower price or the Kindle? I mean, look how long it took them to bring out that device. And I think it has nothing to do with the fact, as much as they want to say, of, hey, we're not going to release a 7-inch iPad. It has more to do with Apple being always really smart about knowing when is the right point to start diversifying a product line that has gotten mature.
Yes. You nailed it right there. And Apple is a master at gauging when to release the diversified product line.
Yeah. They knew they had saturated sales of the 9.7-inch iPad, and they needed something that hit, that was appealing enough to those people who wanted a sub $200. The amazing thing to me is they're getting people who really want a $200 or a sub $200 iPad to buy a $329 iPad.
Well, that's always been the name of Apple's game, though.
Well, yeah, right, exactly. But I mean, that's the thing, is they now have a product that appeals to those people who, you know what, I was going to get a Kindle Fire, but this thing's only $129 more, so I'm going to get that. And those people never would have bought a $400 iPad. That's all
right.
I'm saying.
But had Apple released the smaller iPad at the same time as the big one, they would have lost a lot of big iPad sales.
They would have cannibalized all of the people who would have bought a foreign. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. But I think that at the same time, and I feel like you guys have even said the same thing, is that the smaller iPad is just much nicer than the bigger iPad for a lot of things.
But here's the thing on the sales numbers, too. The thing is that all those people who would have bought the $400 iPad also buy the $329 iPad mini and love it.
Oh, yeah, sure. Definitely.
So, see, that's the genius, is they're getting double duty off those folks.
Right.
The guys like me. Yeah, I love
like
my
iPad.
Like I
said, mini. Apple totally knows how to when to diversify the market.
That's exactly it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you guys think about all the smartwatch rumors that Apple's getting into the smartwatch business? According to the New York Times, Nick Bilton, he says that Apple is experimenting with smartwatches made of curved glass. And of course points to Gorilla Glass's Willow Glass that is bendable. Although they
won't really be available for another 2 years.
Yeah, that is what they said.
I think all those people are limited in their understanding of Apple.
I agree. This is the new Apple HDTV. as far as the rumors and speculation go. And well, they still don't have that television.
So you're saying that they're just making things up?
No, well, no, not at all.
Okay, so Apple, of course, they probably have actual televisions sitting in their labs right now that they experiment with.
Oh, sure.
Mm-hmm.
They have all kinds of wearable technology that they are experimenting with. Of course they do. And they have watches and who knows what else. And what of that is going to come to market? Who knows? And what of that will actually... Okay, so a lot of the stuff that they experiment with in their labs gets rolled into other products. So just because they have a smart watch thing that they might be testing in their secret labs right now doesn't mean they're going to release it. But it also doesn't mean that if they don't release it, that technology won't show up somewhere else, like in an iPhone or a MacBook Pro or whatever.
Here's the thing, right, is it's easy to do a smartwatch, quote unquote.
Sure, yeah.
The question is what problem, what social problem, what technology, what problem in your life right now does a smartwatch solve?
Yeah, and that's the real question that everybody needs to ask themselves.
No, they don't. Most other companies don't.
But that's what we need to ask ourselves.
Pebble throws out a smartwatch, and what does it do? It does some cool stuff. From a technology standpoint, it's cool technology.
Sure.
It's awesome. We love it. It does a lot of really cool, whiz-bangy, geeky kind of stuff, right?
Right.
But Apple doesn't release those products.
Yeah, Apple only...
Apple puts out a product that solves a problem, that uses technology to solve a problem that we have, or sure, that we don't even know we, better yet, the problem that we don't even know we have until Apple tells us, oh, this is the thing. Andy Iannacco was talking about this. I was on the British Tech Network Mac show, and Andy Iannacco brought this up, and it really got me thinking about it. You know, it's going to fill a hole in our life, I think is how he put it, that we didn't know we had.
But see, that's what Apple does.
Yeah, exactly. That was his point. And that's the thing that people aren't thinking about is like, okay, a wearable computer, Apple will bring out a wearable computer when that happens, when they figure out this is the technology, this is the hole in our daily lives that this product is going to fill. Everybody else is just putting technology out for technology's sake. Like, we can have this cool thing that shows my text notifications on my wrist. Well, that is really cool, but what issue in our daily lives does that thing necessarily solve? It doesn't really solve a problem. I can take my phone out of my pocket and look at a text message when it vibrates.
Sure.
Right.
Maybe a little less convenient, but it's not a huge obstacle for most people.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a $250 problem that needs to be solved.
Yeah, it's not like the difference between looking at your phone does for a potential social interaction or just general social graces out in the world, that looking at your phone or as opposed to looking through your Google glasses would do for you. You're still looking down at a thing. Maybe you're looking slightly up higher, maybe, depending on how you look at your watch. But it's not as dramatic a thing. Although the idea of wearable computing is a great thing for...
Which is why Apple is experimenting with
it. Sure, yeah.
But they're going to think about it at a higher level than just the technology itself.
Right. What problem does it solve?
Yeah.
Right. And if you think Apple has not been experimenting with wearable technology, you have
for
not
years.
Watched... Yeah, for years. You have not looked at the iPod lineup. I mean, we had three generations of the iPod Nano that was essentially a wearable device. And it's only the most recent version that went away from being a wearable product. So Apple is clearly experimenting with this stuff, and they are experimenting on us with this stuff without most people realizing.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about the lower cost iPhone rumors that I think we've addressed these previously.
Oh, it's another Apple HDTV thing. Again.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
We did talk about this a little bit last time, and I'm going to stick with the story that I'm sticking with, which is, again, Apple is genius about recognizing when they have a mature product and when to diversify it. And once again, the iPhone, what we're on the fifth generation, moving to the sixth generation of iPhone, there is a whole segment of owners who will never buy, who want an iPhone, but will not buy one because they're too expensive.
Because they don't want a contract and they're too expensive off contract.
Whatever, there's a myriad of reasons, but the end result is all the same. They're not going to invest in the iPhones that Apple offers currently. And so Apple is smart to be considering addressing that problem. Again, they're going to need to figure out how. I mean, they've sort of been using the stopgap measure of, well, we're going to continue to sell a 4 and a 4S. And as a matter of fact, the 4S was the second top selling smartphone last quarter.
Yeah, and they kind of
keeping score.
I think they were low on supplies for the iPhone 4.
Exactly. So Apple will bring a low-cost iPhone out when that sort of number stops happening for them. Right. And I know people want to talk about emerging markets. You know, you can talk about India, China, all these places that just simply can't afford them. But again, I think Apple at the end of the quarter looks at their profit margins and goes, OK, is it time yet or is it not time yet? And it will come out when it makes sense financially for it to come out. So hearing rumors that Apple is thinking about it is not surprising to me at all.
Yeah, I believe Gene Munster is saying that he thinks Apple's going to come out with a $200 price point phone, which is, I don't know.
But that doesn't answer the question. Is it going to be a new phone or is it going to be the 4 at $200?
Sure. And a lot of the rumors are
that now, right? The 4 is already cheaper than that.
Well,
right? you can get the 4 for $50 or free, right?
If you're getting it with a contract, sure. But these are unsubsidized, unlocked, he's talking.
Okay, $200 iPhone 4. Done.
And did you see the story about, I think it was the iPhone 5 at Cricket, was it? That those things just sold so poorly?
No, it's not Cricket. It's one of the regional carriers, and they're not selling well. But it's not as big a deal, I think, as people are making it out to be, because they have no market where they can actually sell the iPhone 5. So
well, okay, and two, okay, who is the customer that goes into that kind of carrier to buy a phone?
Someone who doesn't want to pay a lot.
And how much is an unsubsidized iPhone 5?
Like $500 or $600.
Okay, so done.
So people that are looking for bargain prices and people that are looking for a phone that they can actually use in the area that they typically need coverage. All right, well, the iPhone 5 just got knocked off the list.
Yeah.
So, of course, they have a bunch of phones that they haven't been able to sell.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to be more interesting is to see what happens when T-Mobile does their switch, which I think is coming in a couple of days, right?
Yeah, they're going to get rid of contracts. You're going to have to pay, what is it, $100 right off the top for your phone kind of thing. And you pay like $20 to $30 on top of your monthly bill to eventually pay off your phone. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know how they're working it, but basically, I mean, the net result is unsubsidized phones.
Right.
Right.
And ideally, you're going to pay less than you would somewhere else. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Because
so
people just don't care about the contract.
Will be interesting
It'll
to
be
see.
Very interesting to see.
Yeah.
I like the idea of no contracts. I think contracts is the worst.
That'll be hard to make go away.
Contracts have never been a problem for me. I mean, I hate them, but at the same time, I like not having to pay, you know, $500, $600, $700, $800, $900 upfront for my phone.
Yeah, well, that's why T-Mobile has this alternative. So we'll see how well that goes, because I like it. So we have quite a few other things to talk about during this episode. But before we do that, our show today is brought to you by Squarespace, the beautiful and intuitive website platform that allows anyone to easily create professional web pages, blogs, online stores, and galleries in a single platform. And they've recently announced a new feature, which is very cool. So in addition to, you got the pages, you got blogs, you have galleries, and they have all these wonderful templates, and it's really easy to build. They now have Squarespace Commerce, which lets you easily add a fully integrated store into your website and instantly start accepting payments for like anything you want. So you can sell anything, easily add a store to any Squarespace website, and start selling goods immediately. Painless store management, manage your inventory, process customer orders, print packing slips, and customize emails on one interface. Very flexible options and handy settings to let you quickly set up multiple shipping methods, tax rules, and coupons, which is awesome. Have you tried that, Adam?
I have not had, no, but it's a huge deal. I can tell you, being a web developer and somebody who's built e-commerce websites, that's like...
It's the hardest thing to do.
It is really tricky, and to have a platform that makes that easy for someone to do is very powerful. And a lot of people really want that, right? If you have a small business, if you have something, it just something that you can just buy and turn that feature on and go through a couple simple setup steps, and Squarespace's interface is awesome. So Yeah, people need to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it's awesome. And the fact that it comes with any Squarespace website, if you have one already, you can already do it, which is awesome. You can go ahead and try it out right now for free. You got 14 days to try it out. Squarespace.com/communicators. And if you enter code WHC3 at checkout, you get an additional 10% off when you decide to start rolling forward with it. When you do go to the website, of course, there are tons of templates that you can get started with, and you're not stuck with one of those templates that they have. You can very easily customize it, move stuff around. It's all HTML5. You drag photos in from your desktop and boom, there they are. You don't have to mess with upload forms or anything like that. It's very easy to do things, drag things around, rearrange text. I mean, it's a really great way to build a website. And the fact that they now have the ability to sell things, and I believe you can also sell services, correct? Do you know, Adam?
No. This is a brand new feature, and I use Squarespace for a couple websites that are non-e-commerce, but I'm certainly going to be looking into it when that comes into play.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So check it out, squarespace.com/communicators. Like I said, it also comes with blogs, pages, and photo galleries, in addition to all the other stuff. So it's just one thing. You get all the stuff. Whether or not you want to use it is up to you. It's really easy, and the prices are very reasonable as well. So check it out, squarespace.com/communicators. Use code WHC3, or if you're listening next month, WHC4. So you can try it right now. You don't need a credit card. Go ahead and do that. Start your website for free, and Squarespace, everything you need to create an exceptional website. Like how I botched the tagline.
Nice.
Great. Done.
They are awesome, though. Check them out. They're great people. So we thank them for their support of We Have Communicators. And with that, you know, do you guys know about the passcode bug? Did you see that? Ridiculous passcode.
Which one?
Bug.
There's two, right?
Well, there's
one. But the second one isn't as ridiculous. But yes,
no,
Michael.
I thought the first one was less ridiculous, and the second one was even more ridiculous in terms of what you have to do. I guess you're kind of on the opposite side of talking about what's ridiculous.
We talked about the first one, right?
I don't think we did.
Because the danger is you're going to call 911 and you're going to get in trouble too.
Yeah. Right. We might have talked about the first one already, but so I think you have to. So for someone who has a passcode enabled phone, the 4-digit passcode, mm-hmm. if you have the complex.
Either passcode, as far as I understand.
Okay, so both.
That was
them.
A misnomer. Somebody said, "Oh, well, if you have the non 4-digit one, it won't work." And then somebody proved that you could make it work even with the longer passcode. Okay.
So, do you know the exact process of how to make it work, Adam?
If you give me 2 seconds, I have it in the show notes for my last show. I can bring it up for you. At least the first version. I don't know about. I didn't write down the second version.
The second version
is almost exactly the same, except that you add in at the end, connecting your iPhone to a computer via the USB cable, and then you're supposed to have access through iTunes.
Oh, that's because you've to the phone to the computer. You've unlocked the phone, right?
Except that you really haven't, because
exactly.
when you plug in an iPhone to a computer that it has never been synced with before,
if it has
and you
a
have
passcode.
A passcode,
yeah.
You now have to enter your passcode, which means that to really decrypt the contents of the phone to be able to access it from a computer, you already need to know the access code. Doing something that gives you limited access does not decrypt your phone. So what I'm thinking is that the people that were showing how that hack worked, they were connecting the iPhone to a computer it had already been connected to. And I doubt that they were doing it on purpose to make it look worse than it was.
Oh,
they probably just didn't think about it.
So you're okay. saying that that is not the case, that if you do this process, you can't get full access to the phone.
No, you can't.
Okay.
You cannot. No,
okay.
Because you have to know the passcode to decrypt the contents of the phone.
You can get some significant access. So here's the process for the original hack. All right? Ready for this?
Yep.
So go to the emergency call screen, start the power off sequence, but then you need to cancel it before it actually turns off. Then press the emergency call button to make an emergency call and then quickly cancel that. Then put the phone into standby mode, but then wake it up and then swipe to unlock, and then finally tap the emergency call button again after holding down the power button for 3 to 4 seconds, and then hit the home button right away to prevent the phone from shutting off. So good luck doing all of that.
Something that we all do just by happenstance on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And then once you're in, what you have full access to is the phone app, which would include all of the contacts. And you do have access to the camera roll, but you do not have access to email, messaging, or browsing. So.
Right. So basically what you have access to is the stuff that would need to remain unencrypted anyhow, just for the phone to be able to function in a locked mode.
And plus, you have to have physical access to that phone. So,
right.
You know,
and if someone has physical access to your phone, well, all bets are off,
yeah.
Because then there are all kinds of other ways to potentially hack into the phone. So, yeah. And so really the second hack, which works basically the same way with pretty much the same steps, when you plug a USB cable in and then plug it into your computer, you'll have access to the same things that you would have had with the first hack anyhow, because mm-hmm. now you're just dealing with the content that pretty much needs to remain unencrypted.
So the best advice I could give someone is make sure that if you do have an iPhone and you have your passcode lock set, that you also sign up for the free iCloud service and you activate Find My iPhone. And if you lose your phone and someone else has physical access to it, you remote wipe it.
Well, no, because you might get it back.
What?
I got mine back.
Well, I know, but I mean, again, if this kind of hack concerns you,
sure, yeah,
that much, then that's what you need to do.
Yeah, do that.
Because that will destroy the data that they could potentially access. If like most people, like you, myself, and I, it's more important to me that I get my phone back than somebody can call all the people in my contacts list.
Mm-hmm.
then I would not wipe, not remote wipe it. But
yeah,
you know, you got to make choices.
Right. And speaking of which, I've been using 1Password. I am gradually switching over to that. They gave me a...
Finally!
I know. Because I used to just have 1Password for everything. Now I actually just have 1Password for that app. And for those who don't know how 1Password works, the two of you, I guess, it's a giant database of passwords that are ideally unique, but you use 1Password, a single password, to unlock and decrypt that giant database. And the idea is that that lives on your computer, and you know that 1Password to unlock the rest of the passwords that you don't know, so you can very easily diversify the passwords between all the different websites. So if you are hacked on one website, then they don't automatically have access to every other thing that you have because they know that 1Password. I'm still playing with it. I haven't completely switched over. I'm still using the same password for certain things. My iTunes account specifically is that one kind of concerns me because I have to type it so often on my phone.
Yeah. For that one, what I did on mine is I just came up with a password that is more secure than what I was using, but one that I have memorized.
That's what I did as well.
That's kind of what I'm thinking I'm going to want to do. Did you use 1Password's creation assistant to do that?
No. I came up with an acronym that something that makes sense to me and only me. It has to do with all the different places I lived and certain things. So,
and mine just is Adam is cute
with an asterisk. Well, with a colon and an asterisk.
If it's long enough, you know, you really don't even need the special. If it's long enough and not, you know, a dictionary word and has letters and numbers and upper and lowercase, it's pretty much just as secure as if you, it's my understanding, just as secure if you put in special characters as well.
Right. Yeah. Take a couple random words and put them together, and that will, in most cases, be enough to feed everyone.
Again, if it's long enough, you know, and I'm talking like 24 characters, 25, 30, 32, you know, something crazy long.
I don't think you even need to go that crazy with it.
That is pretty crazy. But yeah, so I've been, I'll probably give updates about that experience over the next couple shows because I'm still playing with it.
The funny thing about using 1Password now is I get really frustrated when I go to like a banking site and they're like 12 character minimum.
Like, yeah, you're like, why are you setting such a low minimum?
Stupid things but you can't use punctuation.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then take off the 12 character limit because now you've just become stupid. Oh, wait, you're a banking site. Of course you're stupid.
that's one of the weird things about using 1Password because I think I have my default set to 24 characters, and it's funny whenever I encounter a website and I have it auto generate a password. It's like you have to be 16. It's like, what? Ah, hate you.
And it needs to be really secure, so we need upper and lowercase letters and a number.
But not too many numbers.
Yeah, and no punctuation. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stop right now, or yeah. I'm just going to spend the next hour ranting on banking sites.
Yeah, let's not. Let's definitely not. The one thing that I have an issue with, though, with 1Password is that if I am trying to sign up for a new service on my phone or my iPad, and I want to do password generation,
it doesn't do it.
Pretty much impossible.
Yeah.
When I reviewed the new version of 1Password for iOS, I believe that was one of the very, very few things I dinged them on.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you want, there have been so many times where I'm trying to do it on my phone, and then I'm like, screw it, I'm going to go to my computer and do this because it's impossible. But I think they said they're working on it. That's what I heard.
They're working on a lot of great things.
Yeah.
Workaround that I have for that is they do have a cool feature where you can
manually create one.
No, like, well, So I'll use, I kind of have a default secure one that I will use in those instances. And then what I do is when you get back to your Mac, if you go into 1Password, you can sort your passwords by password strength.
Mm-hmm.
And then just quickly, you know, jump to that website and then go change it from the desktop. So that's kind of how I handle that.
Okay.
Or you can even search by that password in 1Password. So I'll just search by that 1Password, find all of the instances where I use that as the default.
Oh, cool.
And then just quickly, you know, you can click the link in 1Password, jump to the website, log in, and then just change the password from there.
I did not know you could do that.
Yep.
So the iOS 6.1.3 beta 2 update that has not been pushed out to people, but just to developers so far, but it's been confirmed that it fixes at least one of the exploits used for the jailbreak. So if you're jailbreaking or you plan to jailbreak, you want to do it before they release that, because once Apple releases the new updates, then the signing period for the older ones kind of goes out the window and you can't update to that version. You have to update to the most recent version. So there's that. There was a really cool patent that I saw that was published about a week ago by Apple that would help people with blurry photos or underexposed photos. And I think that I've heard this idea before, but it's the idea that they would have kind of a continuous buffer of photos that it's taking.
This is the Lytro style.
Is that what Lytro does?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I think I've heard that they do that. So you'd have this buffer of maybe like 1 or 2 seconds before the actual photo that you take, that it's just kind of buffering in and out, that when you actually do take the photo, software analyzes what would be the best photo and then saves that one and ditches the rest of them. So in the end, you get ideally a less blurry photo than you would otherwise.
Oh, well, the Lytro saves them all. And then what's cool is you can focus, you can pick your focal point after the fact. So it's constantly taking multiple photos with multiple focal points.
I don't think that's how it works. I think it does something different in terms of, it doesn't take photos the same way. It takes the light spectrum instead of a flat image.
I believe you're right, Michael.
Yeah.
And I know it's weird that I would lean towards your explanation than Adam's, but
wait, this is the Lytro. It that's how it does it?
Yeah.
It uses some magical algorithm that they stole from Hogwarts, I think.
Yeah, it captures all of the light spectrum instead of sort of letting the light hit a sensor and then the sensor just composing an image based on that one focal point kind of thing. So you have a bunch more data to work with, and yeah.
But you can the end result is you get to focus, you get to pick your focal point like after the fact.
Yeah. So, yeah, unless you guys have anything else to talk about, I think it's time for our iDevice picks. And I have a really cool one this week.
So do I.
Because I don't think I have one. Okay. You two go first. I got to figure out what I'm going to do.
All right, Jeff, what's yours?
All right. So my pick this week is based on the fact that app.net has opened up free accounts now. And so there's a lot of people that are looking for a really great iOS app for accessing their app.net account.
Wait, before you talk about it, how do I get a free account?
You need to know someone that that has a paid account and is one of the people that managed to get invite codes. And then they will give you an invite code if you're really nice to them.
Are you one of those people?
The last time I checked, I am not, but I haven't checked in a couple days, so I may be. If I am, I will give you a code.
Let me check. I just noticed that I suddenly all my app.net requests for like follows started going way up really fast.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Okay. So anyway, what's your pick this week, Jeff?
My pick is an app for the iPhone called Repost. R-I-P-O-S-T-E.
I can send you an invite.
Cool. Do it.
Oh, there you go.
I love one. Thank you.
So now you're set. So Repost is it's free, which really has me surprised. And it handles all of the stuff that you really need to be able to do with your app.net account. So you can see your full stream of everyone you're following. You can see all the people that are commenting to you. You can merge the two together so you have a unified stream. And it's a really nice, easy to use interface. And for me, the killer feature, and I have not seen this in any other app.net app, it can handle multiple accounts.
Mm.
And for me, that is so important because I have my own account, but I also need to handle the Mac Observer account. And the way I do that on my Mac is by using Kiwi and Wedge. And Kiwi is for my personal account, Wedge is for a TML account. And and on my iPhone, it's all together, and I can jump between accounts as I need. And it's a really slick, really well-designed app.
How do you spell it?
R-I-P-O-S-T-E.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen this floating around on Appler.
Wait.
Yes, I need to tag it on Appler as something that's really cool.
Well, now, what is this do?
It's a...
So,
you go ahead.
I was sending Michael the invite, so sorry.
Okay, so it's an app.net client for the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And it does all the stuff that you want one of these client apps to do, plus it handles multiple accounts.
But so how does it relate to Kiwi?
Okay, think of all the features that you like in Kiwi.
I can't use Kiwi because I haven't upgraded my main machine to Mountain Lion yet.
Ah, okay.
And so somebody recommended the other one that you mentioned.
Wedge.
But Wedge doesn't cross-post to Twitter.
Right. And it also, as far as I can tell, doesn't handle private messages.
Hmm.
So, yeah. Yes. So Repost is, for me, the all-in-one solution. It just happens to be on my iPhone and nowhere else right now.
Will it cross-post to Twitter?
Ooh, I think it does.
Cool.
I haven't... See, I'm not actually messing around with cross-posting yet, but I believe it actually does.
Because a lot of people have asked me to start posting more on app.net. Again, now that it's gone free, there's more people like saying, hey, why don't you post more on app.net? And the main reason I haven't posted more on app.net is because... it's a pain. I have to post on app.net, and then I have to go over and post on Twitter. I need one app that just posts to both places.
Yeah, which, that totally makes sense. And I'm looking to see if there's a...
So.
Oh, it does stream markers just as it ought to, which is great because then that means it doesn't matter what app you're using to access your app.net account, as long as the app supports stream markers, you can tag where you are in your posts, and then when you go to another app, it automatically essentially syncs to the same location.
Nice.
And maybe it doesn't do cross posting.
I'm not seeing it on here, but I think that's going to become a key feature as we transition from one to the other. I mean, ideally,
you're assuming that transition
everybody just stands up on app.net, but I don't think that's going to happen. Mm. I don't think it's realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, I think that there's a place for app.net and a place for Twitter.
Are there funny things on app.net? Do people say
yes,
funny
there
things?
Are.
Good. Well, if you're on there, then there are some funny things.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, it just doesn't have the draconian new, like, you know, third-party API limits that Twitter has.
Yeah, that... Yeah. How is Tapbots getting around that right now or dealing with it? I guess they have that really high-priced tweet bot on the...
That's how they dealt with it.
But mm-hmm. with...
But they only can sell so many copies and then they're done.
But what about...
have they reached that limit?
Tweetbot on the iPhone, though.
That's what I mean, right?
No, I'm talking about on the Mac. They have that really high price, but on the iPhone, it's... you can just get it. No big.
Yeah, you have to pay for it on the iPhone.
Well, yeah. It's like $3, though, not $25.
But they do have a limited number of, like, you know, accounts that they can tie in, right? That's how, what Twitter's doing at this point.
Yeah. Yes, that's exactly right. And there are several companies that have had to stop selling their Twitter apps because they're just kind of screwed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it was called Repost. I already lost track of it. Yeah, R.I.P. Riposte. Yeah, it's free. So check it out. Adam, do you have a pick ready to go, or should I go?
You go. You go. I got to come up with something. Okay. I'm thinking here. Oh, you know what? You know what I'll pick?
Yeah.
Because I actually really am enjoying it. Is the Surface Pad for iPhone 5. Did somebody pick this? Did Jeff pick this last time?
I don't know.
Jeff, oh, I may have.
The 12 That's South not... case?
I don't think so.
Oh, no. No, I didn't.
Okay, cool. Then I can pick it. So I am not an iPhone case guy. I think I've probably mentioned this many, many times on the show. And I ended up... because of the chamfered edge on my iPhone 5, I ended up getting kind of the slimmest sort of minimalist case I could find. And I've always been a huge fan of 12 South and sort of the products they make. And at Macworld this year, they announced and released. So for a long time, they've had this thing called the Surface Pad, which was like this sticky pad that you would put on your MacBook or your MacBook Pro on either side of the trackpad. That's this nice soft leather material that you can lay down to protect your device as well as give you a nice surface to type from. They took that same leather and they have now fashioned a very minimalistic iPhone 5 case that basically it sticks to the back of your iPhone, but I think it uses that kind of really cool micro kind of suction cup technology. It's a adhesive that you can peel off. You can put it back on. I've actually done it a couple times with this case now. I had no problem re-sticking it, and it doesn't leave kind of any residue or anything like that. But you stick it on, and then it just sort of wraps your iPhone in leather. This really nice leather, and it's just a folio kind of style case that folds back. It actually has a nice little stitched detail on the back that at first I thought was just decorative, but when they were demoing it to me at Macworld, it actually allows you to use it as a landscape orientation kind of stand for watching videos and stuff like that. And I love it. You know, it's just like having this nice sort of leather wallet, and it's breaking in now. I've had it since Macworld, and it's starting to break in and become real pliable, and it's getting all the nice characteristics of like a real leather. And yeah, I like it because it's very minimalistic. Now, I have to tell you, it doesn't afford a ton of protection. I actually dropped my iPhone the other day, and it protected it, you know, from the glass breaking, but I did get a little scuff on the edge. So, but for me, I'm the type of guy that I don't like big bulky cases. So this is a nice compromise. It gives me a little bit of protection, gives me a really nice case that's leather and beautiful and complements the iPhone. And I'm actually really enjoying it. So Surface Pad for iPhone.
Cool. $35 from
12 South.
Yep. So my pick this week is X-Scope Mirror, and it is awesome. I just found out about it yesterday, and I've been working on a mobile version of the site for Appler.
I have X-Scope for the Mac. I've had it for years.
Do you not have X-Scope on your phone or your Mac?
Nope.
iPad? Well, this is great for people who are working with interfaces, trying to develop an interface for an iPad or an iPhone. And particularly for me, the best feature is that it you can, of course, mirror the screen, any portion of the screen from your Mac to your phone or to your iPad with Xscope Mirror. But my favorite feature, and Jeff, you might like this too, is it hooks directly in to CS, into Adobe Photoshop, either 5 or 6. And so what that means is instead of having an exact representation of what's on your screen, what this does is shows you full color, full resolution, exactly the same document that you're working on in Photoshop on your phone or on your iPad, but it also allows you to, on your Mac, zoom in, throw up guides, have your grids on, just zoom in all around. But at the same time, while you're doing that on your Mac, it's just the document at full 100% resolution without any guides or any distraction. It's just what the end result would be on your phone. So as you're designing stuff on your Mac, you can see exactly what it will look like on your phone. And holy crap, this has just been great for me. It has just...
That's very cool.
...made designing stuff so much easier. Because before I was doing things like designing for 2 hours and then, okay, that looks good. I'll save it out to a PNG and then I'll paste it over with PasteBot and then I'll save it to my camera roll so it's full screen kind of thing. And I'm like this, I just keep my phone open on my desk and I see exactly what I'm doing and it updates almost near real time and it's just awesome. So Xscope Mirror is the free viewer part of it. The app, it's a freemium type of app. So you can go and download it from, it's from the Icon Factory. It's $30. It comes with a lot more than just that, but I mean, that alone is kind of worth it.
If you are a developer, of anything, Xscope is extremely valuable, but especially if you develop websites, it's a tool that I use constantly and I've had for years on my Mac. So I'll have to check out the, I haven't checked out the companion mirror app yet, but I'm going to check it out now that you mentioned it.
It's so
been
rocks.
Meaning to for a while, but yeah.
Yeah, it's great. So, but like I said, you can download it, from the Icon Factory's website, the Mac component for free and try it out. I think after the first or second try, they put a little watermark over what you're seeing on your phone, but it's not that intrusive and you can continue what you're doing if you don't want to buy it right away and you want to keep playing with it.
It's just awesome. Buy it. It's well it really worth is. The $30. I mean,
yeah.
I use the rulers all the time. It has the screen things where you can put different screen sizes to kind of see and get an idea in different browsers. Including Windows browsers and things like that, it will give you sort of the viewport, basically the frame with all of the, you know, because different browsers have different UI elements around them and different, you know, operating systems have different UI elements around them. So you can get a good feel for how your page that you're designing is going to look cross-browser. You can pull out guides to line things up. You can throw in frames. You can measure things, you know, in pixel dimensions. It's just, you know, if you're developing websites, it's just a tool you got to have.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't even play with the window thing. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can see like, okay, on IE, you know, whatever version, this is the viewport that people are going to have, you know, at a certain screen resolution, and you'll get an idea of how they're going to see your site. And so if you have an element, you know, that's maybe that important that you want to make sure is above the fold or is in view, you can make sure that you can move it within your design to where it needs to be.
Cool.
Yeah. And it's Icon Factory. I mean, those guys rock.
Oh, they know their stuff.
They do.
Awesome. Okay. So, yeah, Xscope Mirror and Xscope. Awesome stuff. Check it out. With that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send feedback to feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Of course, you want to check out Squarespace to build an awesome website with e-commerce and blogs and photo galleries and pages and all that great stuff for a reasonable price and awesome hosting. They are up all the time. They're the one website that just won't go down with a Dig or a Reddit or whatever. Squarespace.com/communicators and use the code WHC3 at checkout to get an additional 10% off. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, at Jay Gamet on Twitter. What are you on app.net?
Jay Gamet.
Okay.
Makes sense. I wanted to make it easy for people.
Oh, I'm Michael Johnson on app.net now. So same as on Twitter.
Well, then how about if I hop onto app.net through repost and follow you?
Yeah, cool. Thank you. And thanks to Adam for my invite to app.net. He's at the MacCast, MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter, and I'm guessing on app.net as well.
Yep. MacCast.
Cool. Member.maccast.com is the member version of the show.
Yep.
So, and of course, as I said, at Michael Johnson on both app.net and Twitter. Also, at GitAppler is the Appler Twitter. And, you know, if you haven't checked out Appler yet, it's GetAppler.com, GetAppler.com, to find awesome websites, to find awesome apps. Socially,
I have to say that it has been really, and this is not just because you're developing it. I do go on there now to find stuff because, again, this is a whole signal to noise ratio thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's just sort of like there's so much stuff in the App Store, and I know there's other sites that do this, but I've been on those, and they've never reaped the benefits for me that app.net has, or Appler, excuse me, app.net. I've got app.net on the brain, that Appler has because of the social aspect. You know, the fact that I can follow people that whose opinions that I respect and, you know, hold to be good, I can follow those people and I can see what they're picking up. So you'll get these trends, right? I mean, there'll be these internet trends where it's like, oh, everybody's buying this app or that app. But I will then now sort of vet it through Appler to kind of figure out, okay, is this really cool or is this just sort of the hotness of the week that everybody's excited about and they're going to drop tomorrow?
Right, yeah. And,
you know, and so I can go on there and I can ask people. And the other thing that I've been using a lot more now is sort of, you know, I have the apps that I love that do certain things, but I'll find people who are recommending a competing app. And now I can ask them, I can say, hey, why, you know, I use this, why are you using this one? And why do you think it's better? Have you tried that one? And to me, that's a lot more powerful in terms of, you know, do I want to buy this other app and switch to it? Is there a compelling reason for that? Or is this just, you know, because somebody heard about this someplace else and
right, yeah,
they heard it was cool. And I think it's worked both ways. I think I've turned people onto other apps through that process, that ability to comment and reply to comments that I think makes a difference. So
yeah, same here. Definitely.
Yeah. Easy. You know, it's a much better way to weed through the thousands and hundreds of thousands of apps. So I would just encourage people to try it out and let us know what you think.
Thank you, Adam. It's very nice of you. I very much appreciate it. So getappler.com. Check it out. And you're MacCast on Appler, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff is, are you just Jeff?
Jay Gamet. Oh, no, wait.
You are Jeff. Just Jeff.
You're right.
Now,
you're right. I'm Jeff.
Now
just think for a second.
Yeah. I'll have to caveat it, though. I mean, part of the power of Appler is, again, following the people. So you're welcome to follow me if you value my opinion. I'm not going to necessarily follow everybody back. You know, this isn't like sort of Twitter or some of the more open platforms where I do that. I really am trying to follow people who I know and have similar interests and things like that, because I think just following everybody you possibly can is not going to yield the benefit to you.
Right. Yeah. You got to keep the noise down.
Yes.
And I've had to unfollow a couple people over the time that I've been using it because just we don't have similar tastes and stuff. So
yeah,
this is about interest.
This is not about sort of popularity or, you know, just following everybody on the planet. It's more valuable with fewer numbers than it is with, in terms of following, with fewer numbers than I think it is with, you know, just volumes of numbers.
Yep. And I think you have more followers than I do. Quite a few. So
yeah. Awesome. Again, you're welcome to follow me. You know, I will caveat, even if you're going to follow me, just know that I test out and look at a lot of things. But I am trying to be very studious about what things I recommend. And I'm trying to get better about actually commenting on why I might recommend something. And actually, Michael added a feature recently that I had been asking for a while, which was sort of the, I have a bunch of apps that are fine. They're okay. They're not good. They're not bad. They may or may not be things that I absolutely recommend. Just because they don't work for me, but they might work for you. So, you know, this sort of, what do we end up calling it?
So-so.
These so-so the apps, you know, yeah. they're not bad. They're not necessarily good for me. But again, the power of that is that for some people, if you run across an app, there might be an app that a bunch of people are recommending, but it just doesn't fit into sort of the things that I do. Right. And to have that ability to do that and then also comment on why I might be doing that, I think, you know, you got to look at comments, you got to look at overall ratings, and you got to find people that have similar interests to you or are into similar things, I think, to get the power out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm working on getting that discovering people to be even more intuitive than it is now. But of course, there is the feature to just see who is suggested, and that's kind of based on what your recommendations are currently, and it compares it to other people and gives you a big list of people who have similar opinions as you do right out of the gate.
And the other thing is, I mean, it's just us, right? You guys know us, so give us feedback, you know.
Yeah,
let us know what you like, what you don't like, what's working for you, what's not working for you, so that we can make it better. Because, I mean, the ultimate goal here, when Michael mentioned he was putting this together and wanting to do it, you know, really the goal is to make app discovery less painful, you know, to take away that pain point that we all have of how do I know this app is going to be the app that I want to actually plunk my money down. So it benefits us. I think it also benefits developers to make sure that, you know, we're not buying stuff that's going to frustrate us. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that there's a bunch of bad stuff on the app store, but I think a lot of times a lot of us end up finding an app that isn't the right fit for what we're trying to, the problem we're trying to solve. So this is an attempt to solve that pain point and help direct people to the right app for the problem that they're trying to solve.
Yep. And that's also the reason why I'm trying to make it work great on the iPhone as well. So right now it works great on the iPad and your desktop, but not so great on the iPhone, and that's going to be solved pretty soon. Of course, you can still access it, but it'll be highly optimized for the iPhone soon. So you can get through stuff pretty quickly. So with that,
awesome.
We'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.